to Pentos, we moored beside a trader called the Slow-Eyed Maid, and I got to drinking with a Captain Stewart. He told me a pretty tale about some slip of a girl who'd come aboard in Carth to try and book passage back to Westeros for her and three dragons. Silver hair she had, and purple eyes. I took her to the captain me own self, this Stewart swore to me, but he wasn't having none of that. There's more profit in cloves and saffron, he tells me, and spices won't set fire to your sails.
Laughter swept the cellar. Davis did not join in. He knew what had befallen the Slow-Eyed Maid. The guards were cruel to let a man sail half across the world. They send him chasing a false light when he was almost home.
That captain was a bolder man than me, he thought, as he made his way to the door.
One voyage to the east, and a man could live as rich as a lord until the end of his days. When he'd been younger, Davis had dreamed of making such voyages himself. But the years went dancing by like moths around a flame, and somehow the time had never been quite right.
One day, he told himself, one day when the war is done, and King Stannis sits the Iron Throne, and has no more need of onion knights, I'll take Devon with me, Steph and Stanny too, if they're old enough. We'll see these dragons and all the wonders of the world.
Outside, the wind was gusting, making the flames shiver in the oil lamps that lit the yard. It had grown colder since the sun went down, but Davis remembered Eastwatch and how the wind would come screaming off the wall at night, knifing through even the warmest cloak to freeze a man's blood right in his veins. White Harbor was a warm bath by comparison. There were other places he might get his ears filled, an inn famous for its lamprey pies, the alehouse where the wool factors and the customs men did their drinking, a mama's hall where bawdy entertainments could be had for a few pennies, but Davis felt that he'd heard enough.
"I've come too late."
Old instinct made him reach for his chest, where once he kept his finger bones in a little sack on a leather thong. There was nothing there. He had lost his luck in the fires of the Blackwater, when he'd lost his ship and sons.
"What must I do now?"
He pulled his mantle tighter.
"Do I climb the hill and present myself at the gates of the new castle to make a futile plea? Return to Sisterton? Make my way back to Maria and my boys? Buy a horse and ride the King's Road to tell Stannis that he has no friends in White Harbor and no hope?"
Queen Selyse had feasted Sala and his captains the night before the fleet had set sail. Cutter Pike had joined them, and four other high officers of the Night's Watch. Princess Shireen had been allowed to attend as well. As the salmon was being served, Sir Axel Florent had entertained the table with a tale of a Targaryen princeling who kept an ape as a pet. This prince liked to dress the creature in his dead son's clothes and pretend he was a child, Sir Axel claimed, and from time to time he would propose marriages for him. The lords so honored always declined politely, but of course they did decline.
"Even dressed in silk and velvet, an ape remains an ape," Sir Axel said. "A wiser prince would have known that you cannot send an ape to do a man's work."
The queen's men laughed, and several grinned at Davis.
"I am no ape," he'd thought. "I am as much a lord as you, and a better man."
But the memory still stung. The seal gate had been closed for the night. Davis would not be able to return to the Merry Midwife till dawn. He was here for the night. He gazed up at old Fishfoot with his broken trident.
"I have come through rain and rack and storm. I will not go back without doing what I came for, no matter how hopeless it may seem."
He might have lost his fingers and his luck, but he was no ape in velvet. He was a king's hand. Castle Stair was a street with steps, a broad white stoneway that led up from the wolf's den by the water to the new castle on its hill. Marble mermaids lit the way as Davis climbed, bowls of burning whale oil cradled in their arms. When he reached the top, he turned to look behind him. From here he could see down into the harbours, both of them. Behind the jetty wall, the inner harbour was crowded with war galleys. Davis counted 23. Lord Wyman was a fat man, but not an idle one, it seemed. The gates of the new castle had been closed, but a postern opened when he shouted, and a guard emerged to ask his business. Davis showed him the black and gold ribbon that bore the royal seals.
"I need to see Lord Manderley at once," he said. "My business is with him, and him alone."
Daenerys. The dancers shimmered, their sleek, shaved bodies covered with a fine sheen of oil. Blazing torches whirled from hand to hand to the beat of drums and the trilling of a flute. Whenever two torches crossed in the air, a naked girl leapt between them, spinning. The torchlight shone off oiled limbs and breasts and buttocks. The three men were erect. The sight of their arousal was arousing, though Daenerys Targaryen found it comical as well. The men were all of a height, with long legs and flat bellies, every muscle as sharply etched as if it had been chiseled out of stone. Even their faces looked the same, somehow, which was passing strange, since one had skin as dark as ebony, while the second was as pale as milk, and the third gleamed like burnished copper.
"Are they meant to inflame me?"
Dennis stirred amongst her silken cushions. Against the pillars, her unsolid stood like statues in their spike caps, their smooth faces expressionless. Not so the whole men. Resnick Mo Resnick's mouth was open, and his lips glistened wetly as he watched. Hisdar Zolorik was saying something to the man beside him, yet all the time his eyes were on the dancing girls. The shaved pate's ugly, oily face was as stern as ever, but he missed nothing. It was harder to know what her honoured guest was dreaming. The pale, lean, hawk-faced man who shared her high table was resplendent in robes of maroon silk and cloth of gold, his bald head shining in the torchlight as he devoured a fig with small, precise, elegant bites. Opals winked along the nose of Zaro Zoandaxis as his head turned to follow the dancers. In his honour, Daenerys had donned a Carthine gown, a sheer confection of violet samite, cut so as to leave her left breast bare. Her silver gold hair brushed lightly over her shoulder, falling almost to her nipple. Half the men in the hall had stolen glances at her, but not Zaro.
"It was the same in Carth.
She could not sway the merchant prince that way.
Sway him I must, however."
He had come from Carth upon the galleous silken cloud with 13 galleys sailing attendants. His fleet, an answered prayer. Meereen's trade had dwindled away to nothing since she had ended slavery, but Zaro had the power to restore it. As the drums reached a crescendo, three of the girls leapt above the flames, spinning in the air. The male dancers caught them about the waists and slid them down onto their members. Danny watched as the women arched their backs and coiled their legs around their partners, while the flutes wept and the men thrust in time to the music. She had seen the act of love before. The Dothraki mated as openly as their mares and stallions. This was the first time she had seen lust put to music there. Her face was warm.
"The wine,"
she told herself. Yet somehow she found herself thinking of Dario Naharis. His messenger had come that morning. The storm crows were returning from Lassar. Her captain was riding back to her, bringing her the friendship of the Lamb Men.
"Food and trade," she reminded herself. "He did not fail me, nor will he, Dario will help me save my city.
The queen longed to see his face, to stroke his three-pronged beard, to tell him her troubles. But the storm crows were still many days away, beyond the Kaizai Pass, and she had a realm to rule. Smoke hung between the purple pillars. The dancers knelt, heads bowed.
"You were splendid," Danny told them. "Seldom have I seen such grace, such beauty."
She beckoned to Resnick Mo Resnick, and the seneschal scurried to her side. Beads of sweat dotted his bald, wrinkled head.
"Escort our guests to the baths, that they may refresh themselves, and bring them food and drink."
"It shall be my great honour, Magnificence."
Daenerys held out her cup for Eri to refill. The wine was sweet and strong, redolent with the smell of eastern spices, much superior to the thin Gescari wines that had filled her cup of late. Zaro perused the fruits on the platter Jiqui offered him, and chose a persimmon. Its orange skin matched the colour of the coral in his nose. He took a bite and pursed his lips.
"Tart." "Would my lord prefer something sweeter?"
"Sweetness cloys, tart fruit, and tart women give life its savour."
Zaro took another bite, chewed, swallowed.
"Daenerys, sweet queen, I cannot tell you what pleasure it gives me to bask once more in your presence. A child departed Karth, as lost as she was lovely. I feared she was sailing to her doom. Yet now I find her here, enthroned, mistress of an ancient city, surrounded by a mighty host that she raised up out of dreams."
"No," she thought, "out of blood and fire."
I'm glad you came to me. It's good to see your face again, my friend. I will not trust you, but I need you. I need your 13. I need your ships. I need your trade."
For centuries, Meereen and her sister cities, Yunkai and Astapor, had been the linchpins of the slave trade, the place where Dothraki Khals and the corsairs of the Basilisk Isles sold their captives and the rest of the world came to buy. Without slaves, Meereen had little to offer traders. Copper was plentiful in the Gascari Hills, but the metal was not as valuable as it had been when bronze ruled the world. The cedars that had once grown tall along the coast grew no more, felled by the axes of the old empire or consumed by dragonfire when Gis made war against Valyria. Once the trees had gone, the soil baked beneath the hot sun and blew away in thick red clouds.
"It was these calamities that transformed my people into slavers,"
Galaza Galari had told her at the Temple of the Graces.
"And I am the calamity that will change these slavers back into people,"
Danny had sworn to herself.
"I had to come," said Zaro in a languid tone. "Even far away in Karth, fearful tales had reached my ears. I wept to hear them. It is said that your enemies have promised wealth and glory and 100 virgin slave girls to any man who slays you."
"The sons of the Harpy." "How does he know that?" "They scrawl on walls by night and cut the throats of honest freedmen as they sleep. When the sun comes up, they hide like roaches. They fear my brazen beasts."
Skarhaz Mokandak had given her the new watch she had asked for, made up in equal numbers of freedmen and shave-pate Myrinese. They walked the streets both day and night in dark hoods and brazen masks. The sons of the Harpy had promised grisly death to any traitor who dared serve the Dragon Queen, and to their kith and kin as well. So the shave-pate men went about as jackals, owls, and other beasts, keeping their true faces hidden.
"I might have cause to fear the sons if they saw me wandering alone through the streets, but only if it were night and I were naked and unarmed. They are craven creatures."
"A craven's knife can slay a queen as easily as a hero's. I would sleep more soundly if I knew my heart's delight had kept her fierce horse lords close around her." In Karth you had 3 blood riders who never left your side. Wherever have they gone?
Argo, Jakku, and Akaro still serve me. He's playing games with me.
Danny could play as well.
I am only a young girl and know little of such things. But older, wiser men tell me that to hold Meereen I must control its hinterlands, or the land west of Lazar, as far south as the Youngish Hills.
Your hinterlands are not precious to me. Your person is. Should any ill befall you, this world would lose its savour.
My lord is good to care so much, but I am well protected.
Danny gestured toward where Barristan Selmy stood, with one hand resting on his sword-hilt.
Barristan the Bold, they call him. Twice he has saved me from assassins.
Zorro gave Selmy a cursory inspection.
Barristan the Old, did you say? Your bear knight was younger and devoted to you.
I do not wish to speak of Jorah Mormont.
To be sure, the man was coarse and hairy.
The merchant prince leaned across the table.
Let us speak instead of love, of dreams and desire, and Daenerys, the fairest woman in this world. I am drunk with the sight of you.
She was no stranger to the overblown courtesies of Karth.
If you are drunk, blame the wine.
No wine is half so intoxicating as your beauty. My manse has seemed as empty as a tomb since Daenerys departed, and all the pleasures of the Queen of Cities have been as ashes in my mouth. Why did you abandon me?
I was hounded from your city in fear for my life. It was time. Karth wished me gone.
Who? The Pureborn? They have water in their veins. The spices. There are curds between their ears. And the undying are all dead. You should have taken me to husband. I am almost certain that I asked you for your hand. Begged you, even.
Only 50 times, Danny teased. He gave up too easily, my lord. For I must marry, all agree. A Khaleesi must have a cow, said Eerie as she filled the queen's cup once again. This is known.
Shall I ask again? Wondered Zorro. No, I know that smile. It is a cruel queen who dices with men's hearts. Humble merchants like myself are no more than stones beneath your jeweled sandals.
A single tear ran slowly down his pale white cheek. Danny knew him too well to be moved. Carthine men could weep at will.
Oh, stop that!
She took a cherry from a bowl on the table and threw it at his nose.
I may be a young girl, but I'm not so foolish as to wed a man who finds a fruit platter more enticing than my breast. I saw which dances you were watching.
Zorro wiped away his tear.
The same ones your grace was following, I believe. You see, we are alike. If you will not take me for your husband, I am content to be your slave.
I want no slave. I free you.
His jeweled nose made a tempting target. This time Danny threw an apricot at him. Zorro caught it in the air and took a bite.
Whence came this madness? Should I count myself fortunate that you did not free my own slaves when you were my guest in Karth?
I was a beggared queen and you were Zorro of the 13, Danny thought, and all you wanted were my dragons. Your slaves seem well treated and content. It was not till Astapor that my eyes were opened. Do you know how unsullied are made and trained?
Truly, I have no doubt. When a smith makes a sword, he thrusts the blade into the fire, beats on it with a hammer, then plunges it into ice water to temper the steel. If you would savour the sweet taste of the fruit, you must water the tree.
This tree has been watered with blood.
How else to grow a soldier? Your radiance enjoyed my dances. Would it surprise you to know that they are slaves, bred and trained in Yunkai? They have been dancing since they were old enough to walk. How else to achieve such perfection?
He took a swallow of his wine.
They are expert in all the erotic arts as well. I had thought to make your grace a gift of them.
By all means, Danny was unsurprised. I shall free them.
That made him wince.
And what would they do with freedom? As well give a fish a suit of mail. They were made to dance.
Made by who? Their masters? Perhaps your dancers would sooner build or bake or farm. Have you asked them?
Perhaps your elephants would sooner be nightingales, eh? Instead of sweet song, Merin's nights would be filled with thunderous trumpetings, and your trees would shatter beneath the weight of great grey birds.
Zaro sighed.
Daenerys, my delight, beneath that sweet young breast beats a tender heart. But take counsel from an older, wiser head. Things are not always as they seem. Much that may seem evil can be good. Consider rain.
Rain? Does he take me for a fool or just a child?
We curse the rain when it falls upon our heads. Yet without it, we should starve. The world needs rain, and slaves. You make a face, but it is true. Consider Kaas. In art, music, magic, trade, all that makes us more than beasts. Kaas sits above the rest of mankind, as you sit at the summit of this pyramid. But below, in place of bricks, the magnificence that is the queen of cities rests upon the backs of slaves. Ask yourself, if all men must grab in the dirt for food, how shall any man lift his eyes to contemplate the stars? If each of us must break his back to build a hovel, who shall raise the temples to glorify the gods? For some men to be great, others must be enslaved.
He was too eloquent for her. Danny had no answer for him, only the raw feeling in her belly.
Slavery is not the same as rain, she insisted. I have been rained on and I have been sold. It's not the same. No man wants to be owned.
Zaro gave a languid shrug.
As it happens, when I came ashore in your sweet city, I chanced to see upon the river bank a man who had once been a guest in my manse, a merchant who dealt in rare spices and choice wines. He was naked from the waist up, red and peeling, and seemed to be digging a hole.
Not a hole, a ditch to bring water from the river to the fields. We mean to plant beans. The bean fields must have water.
How kind of my old friend to help with the digging, eh? And how very unlike him. Is it possible he was given no choice in the matter? No, surely not. You have no slaves in Merin.
Danny flushed.
Your friend is being paid with food and shelter. I cannot give him back his wealth. Merin needs beans more than it needs rare spices. And beans require water.
Would you set my dancers to digging ditches as well? Sweet queen, when he saw me, my old friend fell to his knees and begged me to buy him as a slave and take him back to Kaas.
She felt as if he'd slapped her.
Buy him, then.
If it please you, I know it will please him.
He put his hand upon her arm.
There are truths only a friend may tell you. I helped you when you came to Kaas, a beggar, and I have crossed long leagues and stormy seas to help you once again. Is there some place where we might speak frankly?
Danny could feel the warmth of his fingers.
He was warm in Kaas as well, she recalled, until the day he had no more use for me.
She rose to her feet. Come, she said, and Zaro followed her through the pillars to the wide marble steps that led up to her private chambers at the apex of the pyramid.
"Oh, most beautiful of women," Zaro said, as they began to climb. "There are footsteps behind us. We are followed."
"My old knight does not frighten you, surely. Sir Barristan is sworn to keep my secrets." She took him out onto the terrace that overlooked the city. The full moon swam in the black sky above Marine. "Shall we walk?" Danny slipped her arm through his. The air was heavy with the scent of night-blooming flowers. "You spoke of help. Trade with me, then. Marine has salt to sell, and wine."
"Giscari wine?" Zorro made a sour face. "The sea provides all the salt that Carth requires, but I would gladly take as many olives as you care to sell me. Olive oil as well."
"I have none to offer. The slavers burnt the trees." Olives had been grown along the shores of Slaver's Bay for centuries, but the Miranese had put their ancient groves to the torch as Danny's host advanced on them, leaving her to cross a blackened wasteland. "We are replanting, but it takes 7 years before an olive tree begins to bear, and 30 years before it can truly be called productive. What of copper?"
"A pretty metal, but fickle as a woman. Gold, now. Gold is sincere. Carth will gladly give you gold for slaves."
"Meereen is a free city of free men."
"A poor city that once was rich. A hungry city that once was fat. A bloody city that once was peaceful."
His accusations stung. There was too much truth in them.
"Marine will be rich and fat and peaceful once again, and free as well. Go to the Dothraki if you must have slaves."
"Dothraki make slaves. Giscari train them. And to reach Carth, the horse lords must needs drive their captives across the Red Wastes. Hundreds would die, if not thousands, and many horses too, which is why no Carl will risk it. And there is this. Carth wants no Khalisars seething round our walls. The stench of all those horses. Meaning no offense, Khaleesi."
"A horse has an honest smell. That is more than can be said of some great lords and merchant princes."
Zaro took no notice of the sally.
"Daenerys, let me be honest with you, as befits a friend. You will not make Meereen rich and fat and peaceful. You will only bring it to destruction, as you did Astapor. You are aware that there was battle joined at the Horns of Hazard? The Butcher King has fled back to his palace, his new Unsullied running at his heels."
"And this is known."
Brown Ben Plum had sent back word of the battle from the field.
"The Yunkai have bought themselves new sellswords, and 2 legions from New Gis fought beside them."
"2 will soon become 4, and then 10. And Yunkish envoys have been sent to Mir and Valantis to hire more blades. The company of the cat, the long lances, the windblown, some say that the wise masters have bought the golden company as well."
Her brother Viserys had once feasted the captains of the golden company in hope they might take up his cause.
They ate his food and heard his pleas and laughed at him.
Danny had only been a little girl, but she remembered.
"I have sellswords too."
"2 companies. The Yunkai will send 20 against you, if they must. And when they march, they will not march alone. Tolos and Mantares have agreed to an alliance."
That was ill news, if true. Daenerys had sent missions to Tolos and Mantares, hoping to find new friends to the west to balance the enmity of Yunkai to the south. Her envoys had not returned.
"Meereen has made alliance with Lazar."
That only made him chuckle. "The Dothraki horse lords call the Lazarine the lambmen. When you shear them, all they do is bleat. They are not a martial people."
"Even a sheepish friend is better than none." The wise masters should follow their example. I spared Yunkai before, but I will not make that mistake again. If they should dare attack me, this time I shall raise their yellow city to the ground.
And whilst you are raising Yunkai, my sweet, Meereen shall rise behind you. Do not close your eyes to your peril, Daenerys. Your eunuchs are fine soldiers, but they are too few to match the hosts that Yunkai will send against you once Astapor has fallen.
My freedmen, Danny started,
bed slaves, barbers, and brickmakers with no battles.
He was wrong in that, she hoped. The freedmen had been a rabble once, but she had organized the men of fighting age into companies and commanded Grey Worm to make them into soldiers.
Let him think what he will. Have you forgotten? I have dragons.
Do you? In Karth, you are seldom seen without a dragon on your shoulder. Yet now that shapely shoulder is as fair and bare as your sweet breast, I observe.
My dragons have grown, my shoulders have not. They range far afield, hunting.
Hazael, forgive me.
She wondered how much Zyro knew, what whispers he had heard.
Ask the good masters of Astapor about my dragons if you doubt them. I saw a slaver's eyes melt and go running down his cheeks. Tell me true, old friend, why did you seek me out, if not to trade?
To bring a gift for the queen of my heart.
Say on. What trap is this now?
The gift you begged of me in Karth. Ships. There are 13 galleys in the bay. Yours, if you will have them. I have brought you a fleet to carry you home to Westeros.
A fleet?
It was more than she could hope for. So, of course, it made her wary. In Karth, Zaro had offered her 30 ships for a dragon.
And what price do you ask for these ships?
None. I no longer lust for dragons. Oh, I saw their work at Astapor on my way here, when my silken cloud put in for water. The ships are yours, sweet queen. 13 galleys and men to pull the oars.
13, to be sure.
Zaro was one of the 13. No doubt he had convinced each of his fellow members to give up one ship. She knew the merchant prince too well to think that he would sacrifice 13 of his own ships.
I must consider this. May I inspect these ships?
You have grown suspicious, Daenerys.
Always.
I have grown wise, Zaro. Inspect all you wish. When you are satisfied, swear to me that you shall return to Westeros forthwith, and the ships are yours. Swear by your dragons and your seven-faced god and the ashes of your fathers, and go.
And if I should decide to wait a year or three?
A mournful look crossed Zaro's face.
That would make me very sad, my sweet delight. For young and strong as you now seem, you shall not live so long, not here.
He offers the honeycomb with one hand and shows the whip with the other. The Yunkai are not so fearsome as all that.
Not all your enemies are in the Yellow City. Beware men with cold hearts and blue lips. You had not been gone from Karth a fortnight when Piet Pree set out with three of his fellow warlocks to seek for you in Pentos.
Danny was more amused than afraid.
It is good I turned aside then. Pentos is half a world from Meereen.
That is so, he allowed. Yet soon or late, word must reach them of the Dragon Queen of Slaver's Bay.
Is that meant to frighten me? I lived in fear for 14 years, my lord. I woke afraid each morning and went to sleep afraid each night. But my fears were burned away the day I came forth from the fire. Only one thing frightens me now.
And what is that you fear, sweet queen?
I'm only a foolish young girl.
Danny rose on her toes and kissed his cheek.
But not so foolish as to tell you that. My men shall look at these ships. Then you shall have my answer.
As you say.
He touched her bare breast lightly and whispered,
Let me stay and help persuade you.
For a moment she was tempted. Perhaps the dancers had stirred her after all.
I could close my eyes and pretend that he was Dario.
A dream Dario would be safer than the real one. But she pushed the thought aside.
No, my lord. I thank you, but no.
Danny slipped from his arms.
Some other night, perhaps.
Some other night.
His mouth was sad, but his eyes seemed more relieved than disappointed.
If I were a dragon, I could fly to Westeros, she thought when he was gone. I would have no need of Zaro or his ships.
Danny wondered how many men 13 galleys could hold. It had taken 3 to carry her and her Khalasar from Karth to Astapor, but that was before she had acquired 8,000 on solid, 1,000 sellswords, and a vast horde of freedmen.
And the dragons, what am I to do with them?
Drogon, she whispered softly, where are you?
For a moment she could almost see him sweeping across the sky, his black wings swallowing the stars. She turned her back upon the night, to where Barristan Selmy stood silent in the shadows.
My brother once told me a Westerosi riddle. Who listens to everything, yet hears nothing?
A knight of the king's guard.
Selmy's voice was solemn.
You heard Zaro make his offer.
I did, your grace.
The old knight took pains not to look at her bare breast as he spoke to her.
Sir Jaro would not turn his eyes away. He loved me as a woman, where Sir Barristan loves me only as his queen.
Mormont had been an informer, reporting to her enemies in Westeros, yet he had given her good counsel, too.
What do you think of it, of him?
Of him, little and less. These ships, though, your grace, with these ships we might be home before a year's end.
Danny had never known a home. In Braavos there had been a house with a red door, but that was all.
Beware of Carthen bearing gifts, especially merchants of the 13. There is some trap here. Perhaps these ships are rotten, or—
If they were so unseaworthy, they could not have crossed the sea from Carth, Sir Barristan pointed out. But your grace was wise to insist upon inspection. I will take Admiral Grolio to the galleys at first light with his captains and 20 of his sailors. We can crawl over every inch of those ships.
It was good counsel. Yes, make it so. Westeros, home.
But if she left, what would happen to her city?
Meereen was never your city,
her brother's voice seemed to whisper.
Your cities are across the sea, your 7 kingdoms, where your enemies await you. You were born to serve them, blood and fire.
Sir Barristan cleared his throat and said,
This warlock that the merchant spoke of.
Piet Pri,
she tried to recall his face, but all she could see were his lips. The wine of the warlocks had turned them blue. Shade of the evening, it was called.
If a warlock spell could kill me, I would be dead by now. I left their palace all in ashes.
Drogon saved me when they would have drained my life from me. Drogon burned them all.
As you say, your grace, still I will be watchful. She kissed him on the cheek.
I know you will. Come walk me back down to the feast.
The next morning Danny woke as full of hope as she had been since first she came to Slaver's Bay. Dario would soon be at her side once more, and together they would sail for Westeros, for home. One of her young hostages brought her morning meal, a plump shy girl named Mazara, whose father ruled the pyramid of Marek, and Danny gave her a happy hug and thanked her with a kiss.
Zaro Zoandaxis has offered me 13 galleys,
she told Irie and Jiqui as they were dressing her for court.
13 is a bad number,
Khaleesi, murmured Jiqui in the Dothraki tongue. It is known.
It is known, Iri agreed.
30 would be better, Daenerys agreed. 300 better still. But 13 may suffice to carry us to Westeros.
The two Dothraki girls exchanged a look.
The poisoned water is accursed, Khaleesi, said Iri. Horses cannot drink it.
I do not intend to drink it, Danny promised them.
Only 4 petitioners awaited them that morning. As ever, Lord Gale was the first to present himself, looking even more wretched than usual.
"Your radiance," he moaned, as he fell to the marble at her feet. "The armies of the Yankai descend on Astapor. I beg you, come south with all your strength."
"I warned your king in this war of his, was Polly," Danny reminded him. "He would not listen.
Great Cleon sought only to strike down the vile slavers of Yunkai."
"Great Cleon is a slaver himself."
"I know that the Mother of Dragons will not abandon us in our hour of peril. Lend us your unsullied to defend our walls."
"And if I do, who will defend my walls?"
"Many of my freedmen were slaves in Astapor. Perhaps some will wish to help defend your king. That is their choice, as free men. I gave Astapor its freedom. It is up to you to defend it."
"We are all dead, then. You gave us death, not freedom."
Gale leapt to his feet and spat into her face. Strong Belwas seized him by the shoulder and slammed him down onto the marble so hard that Danny heard Gale's teeth crack. The shave-pate would have done worse, but she stopped him.
"Enough," she said,
dabbing at her cheek with the end of her tokar.
"No one has ever died from spittle. Take him away."
They dragged him out feet first, leaving several broken teeth and a trail of blood behind. Danny would gladly have sent the rest of the petitioners away, but she was still their queen, so she heard them out and did her best to give them justice. Late that afternoon, Admiral Grolio and Sir Barristan returned from their inspection of the galleys. Danny assembled her council to hear them. Grey Worm was there for the Unsullied, Skarhaz Mokandak for the Brazen Beasts. In the absence of her blood riders, a wizened Jack-o'-Ran, called Romo, squint-eyed and bow-legged, came to speak for her Dothraki. Her freedmen were represented by the captains of the 3 companies she had formed, Malono Yasdob of the Stalwart Shields, Simon Stripeback of the Free Brothers, Marcellin of the Mother's Men. Resnick Mo Resnick hovered at the Queen's elbow, and Strong Belwas stood behind her, with his huge arms crossed. Danny would not lack for counsel. Grolio had been a most unhappy man since they had broken up his ship to build the siege engines that won Meereen for her. Danny had tried to console him by naming him her Lord Admiral, but it was a hollow honor. The Meereenese fleet had sailed for Yunkai when Danny's host approached the city, so the old Pentoshi was an admiral without ships. Yet now he was smiling through his ragged, salt-streaked beard in a way that the Queen could scarce remember.
"The ships are sound, then,"
she said, hoping.
"Sound enough, Your Grace. They are all ships aye, but most are well-maintained. The hull of the pure-born princess is worm-eaten. I'd not want to take her beyond the sight of land. The Naraka could stand a new rudder and lines, and the banded lizard has some cracked oars, but they will serve. The rowers are slaves, but if we offer them an honest oarsman's wage, most will stay with us. Rowing's all they know. Those who leave can be replaced for my own crews. It's a long, hard voyage to Westeros, but these ships are sound enough to get us there, I judge."
Resnick Mo Resnick gave a piteous moan.
"Then it is true. Your worship means to abandon us." He wrung his hands. "The Yunkai will restore the great masters the instant you are gone, and we who have so faithfully served your cause will be put to the sword.
or sweet wives and maiden daughters raped and enslaved.
Not mine, grumbled Skaha's shave-pate. I will kill them first, with my own hand. He slapped his sword-hilt.
Then he felt as if he'd slapped her face instead.
If you fear what may follow when I leave, come with me to Westeros. Wherever the Mother of Dragons goes, the Mother's men will go as well,
announced Marcellin, Masende's remaining brother.
How?
Asked Simon Stripeback, named for the tangle of scars that ridged his back and shoulders, a reminder of the whippings he had suffered as a slave in Astapor.
13 ships, that's not enough. 100 ships might not be enough.
Wooden horses are no good, objected Romo, the old Jacaran. Dothraki will ride.
These ones could march overland along the shore, suggested Grey Worm. The ships could keep pace and resupply the column.
That might serve until you reach the ruins of Borash, said the shave-pate. Beyond that, your ships would need to turn south, past Tullus and the Isle of Cedars, and sail around Valyria, whilst the foot continued on to Mantares by the old dragon road.
The demon road, they call it now, said Milono Yosdob.
The plump commander of the stalwart shields looked more like a scribe than a soldier, with his inky hands and heavy paunch, but he was clever as they came.
Many and more of us would die.
Those left behind in Meereen would envy them their easy death, moaned Resnick. They will make slaves of us, or throw us in the pits. All will be as it was, or worse.
Where is your courage? Sir Barristan lashed out. Her Grace freed you from your chains. It is for you to sharpen your swords and defend your own freedom when she leaves.
Brave words from one who means to sail into the sunset, Simon Stripeback snarled back.
Will you look back at our dying?
Your Grace, magnificence, your worship.
Enough. Danny slapped the table. No one will be left to die. You're all my people.
Her dreams of home and love had blinded her.
I will not abandon Meereen to the fate of Astapor. It grieves me to say so, but Westeros must wait.
Grolio was aghast.
We must accept these ships if we refuse this gift.
Sir Barristan went to one knee before her.
My queen, your realm has need of you. You are not wanted here, but in Westeros men will flock to your banners by the thousands, great lords and noble knights. She has come, they will shout to one another in glad voices. Prince Rhaegar's sister has come home at last. If they love me so much, they will wait for me.
Danny stood.
Resnick, summon Zaro Zoan Daxus.
She received the merchant prince alone, seated on her bench on polished ebony, on the cushion Sir Barristan had brought her. 4 Carthine sailors accompanied him, bearing a rolled tapestry upon their shoulders.
"I have brought another gift for the queen of my heart," Zaro announced. "It has been in my family vaults since before the doom that took Valyria."
The sailors unrolled the tapestry across the floor. It was old, dusty, faded, and huge. Danny had to move to Zaro's side before the patterns became plain.
A map? It is beautiful.
It covered half the floor. The seas were blue, the lands were green, the mountains black and brown. Cities were shown as stars in gold or silver thread.
There is no smoking sea, she realized. Valyria is not yet an island.
There you see Astapor and Yunkai and Meereen.
Zara pointed at 3 silver stars beside the blue of Slaver's Bay.
Westeros is, somewhere down there.
His hand waved vaguely toward the far end of the hall.
You turn north when you should have continued south and west. Across the summer sea, but with my gift you shall soon be back where you belong, except my galleys with a joyful heart, and bend your oars westward.
Would that I could. My lord, I will gladly have those ships, but I cannot give you the promise that you ask.
She took his hand.
"Give me the galleys, and I will swear that Carth will have the friendship of Meereen until the stars go out. Let me trade with them, and you will have a good part of the profits."
Zaro's glad smile died upon his lips.
"What are you saying? Are you telling me you will not go?"
"I cannot go."
Tears welled from his eyes, creeping down his nose, past emeralds, amethysts, and black diamonds.
"I told the 13 that you would heed my wisdom. It grieves me to learn that I was wrong. Take these ships and sail away, or you will surely die screaming. You cannot know how many enemies you have made."
"I know one stands before me now, weeping mummer's tears."
The realization made her sad.
"When I went to the Hall of 1,000 Thrones to beg the pureborn for your life, I said that you were no more than a child," Zara went on. "But Aegon Emerus the Exquisite rose and said, 'She is a foolish child, mad and heedless, and too dangerous to live. When your dragons were small, they were wonder. Grown, they are death and devastation, a flaming sword above the world.'"
He wiped away the tears.
"I should have slain you in Carth."
"I was a guest beneath your roof and ate of your meat and mead," she said. "In memory of all you did for me, I will forgive those words once, but never presume to threaten me again."
"Zaro Zoandaxus does not threaten. He promises."
Her sadness turned to fury.
"And I promise you that if you are not gone before the sun comes up, we will learn how well a liar's tears can quench dragon fire. Lead me, Zaro, quickly."
He went, but left his world behind. Danny seated herself upon her bench again to gaze across the blue silk sea toward distant Westeros.
"One day,"
she promised herself. The next morning, Zaro's galleys was gone, but the gift that he had brought her remained behind in Slaver's Bay. Long red streamers flew from the masts of the 13 Carthian galleys, writhing in the wind. And when Daenerys descended to her court, a messenger from the ships awaited her. He spoke no word, but laid at her feet a black satin pillow, upon which rested a single blood-stained glove.
"What is this?"
Scarhaus demanded.
"A bloody glove?"
"Means war,"
said the queen. John.
"Careful of the wretch, my lord." Dolorous Ed led John down the steps, a lantern in one hand. "They make an awful squeal if you step on them. My mother used to make a similar sound when I was a boy. She must have had some rat in her, now that I think of it. Brown hair, beady little eyes, like cheese. Might be she had a tail, too, I never looked to see."
All of Castle Black was connected underground by a maze of tunnels that the brothers called the Wormways. It was dark and gloomy underneath the earth, so the Wormways were little used in summer. But when the winter winds began to blow and the snows began to fall, the tunnels became the quickest way to move about the castle. The Stuarts were making use of them already. John saw candles burning in several wall niches as they made their way along the tunnel, their footsteps echoing ahead of them. Bowen Marsh was waiting at a junction where four Wormways met. With him he had Wick Whittlestick, tall and skinny as a spear.
"These are the counts from 3 terms ago," Marsh told John, offering him a thick sheaf of papers. "For comparison with our present stores, shall we start with the granaries?"
They moved through the grey gloom beneath the earth. Each storeroom had a solid oaken door closed with an iron padlock, as big as a supper plate. "Is pilferage a problem?" John asked.
"Not as yet," said Bowen Marsh. "Once winter comes, though, your lordship might be wise to post guards down here."
Wick Whittlestick wore the keys on a ring about his neck. They all looked alike to John, yet somehow Wick found the right one for every door. Once inside, he would take a fist-sized chunk of chalk from his pouch and mark each cask and sack and barrel as he counted them, while Marsh compared the new count to the old. In the granaries were oats and wheat and barley, and barrels of coarse ground flour. In the root cellars, strings of onions and garlic dangled from the rafters, and bags of carrots, parsnips, radishes, and white and yellow turnips filled the shelves. One storeroom held wheels of cheese so large it took two men to move them. In the next, casks of salt beef, salt pork, salt mutton, and salt cud were stacked 10 feet high. 300 hams and 3,000 long black sausages hung from ceiling beams below the smokehouse. In the spice locker they found peppercorns, cloves, and cinnamon, mustard seeds, coriander, sage and clary sage, and parsley, blocks of salt. Elsewhere were casks of apples and pears, dried peas, dried figs, bags of walnuts, bags of chestnuts, bags of almonds, planks of dry smoked salmon, clay jars packed with olives and oil and sealed with wax. One storeroom offered potted hare, haunch of deer in honey, pickled cabbage, pickled beets, pickled onions, pickled eggs, and pickled herring. As they moved from one vault to another, the worm ways seemed to grow colder. Before long, John could see their breath frosting in the lantern light. "We're beneath the wall."
"And soon inside it," said Marsh. "The meat won't spoil in the cold. For long storage, it's better than salting."
The next door was made of rusty iron. Behind it was a flight of wooden steps. Dolorous Ed led the way with his lantern. Up top they found a tunnel as long as Winterfell's great hall, though no wider than the wormways. The walls were ice, bristling with iron hooks. From each hook hung a carcass, skinned deer and elk, sides of beef, huge sows swinging from the ceiling, headless sheep and goats, even horse and bear. Hoarfrost covered everything. As they did their count, John peeled the glove off his left hand and touched the nearest haunch of venison. He could feel his fingers sticking, and when he pulled them back, he lost a bit of skin. His fingertips were numb. "What did you expect? There's a mountain of ice above your head. More tons than even Bowen Marsh could count." Even so, the room felt colder than it should.
"It is worse than I feared, my lord," Marsh announced when he was done. He sounded gloomier than Dolorous Ed.
John had just been thinking that all the meat in the world surrounded them. "You know nothing, Jon Snow."
"How so?
There seems a deal of food to me."
"It was a long summer. The harvests were bountiful, the lords generous. We had enough laid by to see us through 3 years of winter, four with a bit of scrimping. Now, though, if we must go on feeding all these king's men and queen's men and wildlings, Molestown alone has 1,000 useless mouths, and still they come. Three more turned up yesterday at the gates, a dozen the day before. It cannot go on. Settling them on the gift, that's well and good, but it's too late to plant crops. We'll be down to turnips and peas porridge before the year is out. After that, we'll be drinking the blood of our own horses."
"Yum," declared Dolorhead. "Nothing beats our cup of horse blood on a cold night. I like mine with a pinch of cinnamon sprinkled on top." The Lord Steward paid him no mind.
"There will be sickness, too," he went on. "Bleeding gums and loose teeth. Maester Aemon used to say that lime juice and fresh meat would remedy that. But our limes were gone a year ago, and we do not have enough fodder to keep herds afoot for fresh meat. We should butcher all but a few breeding pairs. It's past time. In winters past, food could be brought up the King's Road from the south. But with the war...
It is still autumn, I know, but I would advise we go on winter rations nonetheless, if it pleased my lord." "Oh, the men will love that."
"If we must, we'll cut each man's portion by a quarter."
"If my brothers are complaining of me now, what will they say when they're eating snow and acorn paste?"
"That will help, my lord."
The Lord Steward's tone made it plain that he did not think that it would help enough. Dolores Ed said,